are good. Alex, welcome back to the show.
Hello. I have deepened my voice since I've been gone.
This is funny. It feels like a little full circle-y, given that I was unsure of the future of the podcast, right? And the funding goal just got met, and now I get to talk to you, and you were my very first guest. Like, you're the first episode on the podcast, so now it feels like, oh, full circle coming.
Yeah, and a proud Patreon member of you.
Yes, you are. Yeah, yes. I know. That always makes me very happy when we have guests that are also Patreon members, that are members of the community. It's fun. Well, and also this is way better because now we get to record here in person as opposed to just over Skype.
I know. It's so exciting to be in your studio. I feel like it's NPR.
I mean, you're playing it a little fast and loose with the word studio. It's my office that has some mics in it, but...
But they're like really nice microphones and I feel very fancy.
They are nice microphones. Shout out to Adam, my sound magician, who was basically like, here you go, buy these things.
Yeah, sometimes you just need a person to tell you what to buy.
I mean, absolutely. He was like, here's three different price points. Pick one of those, and then I will tell you how to set it up. I was like, yep, you are my magician. Okay, so we're going to do a little end of year reflection, which is basically my favorite topic of conversation. Where do we want to start? Let's say, looking back over the year, what are some things that you feel really proud of?
Whoa. This past year, 2016, was a very interesting year for me. You know a little of the backstory, but the podcast listeners probably do not because they're probably not eavesdropping on my phone calls, I'm guessing. So this year kind of began with me declaring to a friend of mine, our mutual friend, Melissa, that I wanted to have a really chill year. I didn't want to work that hard. I wanted a lot of time off. And I was just really preparing myself for just a chillaxed kind of vibe. And I remember Melissa kind of looked at me like, uh-huh, like, we'll see about that. And she was right, because none of that happened. In fact, I sort of somewhat randomly, but also sort of intentionally, decided that I would help my partner, Brandon, to start a new restaurant business, which I did. And it was one of those things that, as many creative projects are, you know, started out seeming just so easy and fun and like it wouldn't take much time at all. And I would just sort of help out for a couple weekends and he'd be off and rolling. And it actually ended up becoming a massive undertaking that entailed, you know, me literally, you know, helping him at the restaurant every weekend, getting there at 5 a.m, setting up the room, waitressing, hostessing, serving, washing dishes by hand until 5 or 6 p.m., repeating the next day, you know, then going right back into my normal work on Monday, working all week, you know, while also helping him with marketing and publicity and hiring. And I mean, just, you can't even imagine, like for pretty much most of the year, I was kind of straddling like two full-time jobs. And by September or so, I was really, really tired and really burnt out and feeling, I mean, it feeling and also quite literally realizing like I don't have any free time. Mm-hmm. Like I don't have a weekend. My workouts have not been happening like they normally are. I'm tired. I have, you know, these personal projects like books that I've been working on that just have not been getting my attention because I don't have time and I don't have energy and I'm just spread way too thin. So this year, most of this year was kind of this weird thing of like, on the one hand, being so proud of the work that we were doing and so proud of Brandon. And so it's so amazing to see his new business take shape, but also quietly feeling like, but what about me? Like, what about sleep? What about my goals? What about my life? And come September, October, I had to really decide, like, what am I doing? Like, what are my priorities here? Because this current configuration is not sustainable. So I decided to basically just step away from the restaurant. And at that point, Brandon and his had a staff of 7 people and things were working and thriving. So he didn't really need me. And after I made that choice, like the rest of my year just felt so different because I basically went to having one career instead of two. Right, it was like, it was delightful. So that, I mean, I painted kind of a somber picture. It was actually an amazing year and very beautiful and full of so many achievements. But yeah, it was the huge lesson for me this year was there's only one of me and there's only 24 hours in the day and all the love in the world does not make it 48 hours instead of 24. Like you have to, at a certain point, just be really brutal with yourself about where you want your time to be going.
Yeah.
And certain things are not sustainable.
And also this idea that like you can love someone so much and like want them to succeed and obviously want to be there to help, but it, like no matter how much you love them, their dream isn't necessarily your dream.
That's right. Yeah. Brandon has been a chef for 10 years. He's always wanted to have his own restaurant. It's been a huge lifelong dream of his. And I'm so happy that it's happening now, but it's not my dream. I've never wanted to be a restaurateur. You know, that's not my world. And it was interesting collaborating with my romantic partner on a business because it becomes so emotional. And there was a point towards the end, you know, September or so, when I was like, I really think I need to step away from this. You know, I don't think he really needs me anymore. But then there was like a part of me that was like, but if I stop helping, he won't love me as much, or he'll feel like I'm, you know, abandoning him, or, you know, or it won't work. You know, maybe I'm indispensable. Maybe this business needs me. So there was all this like ego and emotion and fear and all this stuff, which made the simple decision to step away very not simple, or at least it felt that way. So yeah, it's like, it's a big sludge of part stuff.
Yeah. So how did that culminate for you? Did you guys wind up having like a conversation where you, do you remember the moment where you went to him and you were like, I can't do this anymore?
Yeah. So what was really funny, and I think this is so often the case, is like, so in my mind, there's like a million emotions and feelings and all this stuff. And I talk to Brandon and I tell him everything. I'm like, you know, I'm feeling scared about this and I'm worried about this. And if I'm not there, what if this happens? And what if you feel like this? And he basically was like, I'm fine. Like, whatever you want to do is fine. And he really meant it. So it was, you know, it was very much like a one-sided emotional tornado. He was actually quite happy with whatever I chose and just wanted me to be happy. So it was really just that I had to decide, like, okay, like, I'm doing this. So yeah, it happened kind of quickly. Like, once I made the decision, everything happened really fast. Like, I actually ended up taking a trip to New York. And that weekend I was like, I'm going to New York. I can't help you at the restaurant. So hope you'll be fine. Bye. And he was fine. And in fact, it was like a fabulous weekend and everything went great. So after that, I was like, oh yeah, I'm not indispensable. And that's a good thing.
And yeah, totally. You're speaking to something that I went through more last year than this year, but this idea that like we forget in any kind of relationship, right? That you're not that you're only half of the equation, right? Mm-hmm. And like, it's so easy to feel like I have all these fears and concerns, and you like put so much stuff onto the other person. Like, this happened a lot for us when I was like making the decision to kind of wind down my business, take a sabbatical, and then start up the podcast, yeah. Which basically meant like greatly reducing my income. Right. And I had so many feelings about, you know, Paul's going to be making so much more money than me. And what does this mean? And what if that, and like 100%, they were all my own issues. Like, we wound up having, I don't know, 13 to 15 conversations about it, all of which, when he was like, I don't care, do what you want to do. Like, we have enough money. It's fine. It's just, you know, like, but it's, I had so much stuff, and like before we actually sat down and started talking about it, I had projected like all these assumptions, like he's going to feel this way, he's going to be resentful, he's going to this, and like it's really not fair to the other person to like, they're their own human being. You have to give them a chance to like speak for themselves and not just like dissolve into this like pit of anxiety. Yeah. You know,
I think another big lesson with you know, helping my partner to build a restaurant but then also stepping away from the restaurant was you know, although many people meet me and think that I'm very calm and relaxed and chill, which I am, I also have a very obsessive controlling streak. And there were times after I stepped away from the restaurant where like I would pop in to say hi or pop in to visit, and I would notice like, you know, that the half and half thing is empty, or these books over here are messy. They're not arranged in a perfect, beautiful fan, or, you know, there's crumbs over here that shouldn't be. Like, I would just start noticing everything and be like, and then I would think to myself, like, see, like, they're not doing it the way that I would do it, or like, you know, my way is better. Like, they, you know, so it was like a part of this also was me having a moment of going, you know what? Like, it is possible that no one who ever works at this restaurant will be as obsessively tidy as I am. And I just have to accept that and be like, they're going to do it their way. And that's good enough. And it's wonderful. And like, and it was very hard for me to release the control, especially of something that I felt emotionally attached to. And that sort of had my stamp and my name attached to it in a small way. So that's something I'm still working on, but it is not easy when you are an artist in some way or another, and you see things not being done the way that is the most beautiful or perfect, and it like really bothers you. So anyway, that's kind of another thing that I'm still working on letting go of and just letting him do it his way.
I mean, I feel like it's humbling to have to be like, to also have to look at the fact that the restaurant's doing great even without that being true, right? Like we seem to think my way is the best way. Mm-hmm. And then, okay, well that's not true, because obviously it's still doing great. But then that it's like the also simultaneously with that, just because you're good at something doesn't mean that that's the right path for you, right? Like just because you could be an incredible restaurant manager, hostess, person, you know, whatever, doesn't mean that that's, just because you can do it doesn't mean you should do it.
Absolutely. That's actually something that my very, very first career coach that I ever hired way back when I barely knew what a career coach was, like 8 years ago, one of the first exercises she had me do, her name's Michelle Ward, she's amazing, was, I think it was like a worksheet divided into three columns where it was something like things that you're really good at, but that you don't particularly enjoy, things you're really good at that you do enjoy, and then things you enjoy that you're not very good at, or something like that. And she had me like make lists of things. And what we discovered was that at the time I was working in public broadcasting, I was working at a radio station, I was doing a lot of work that was very kind of organizational and logistic, you know, organizing recording schedules and booking. And like, you know, it was very kind of a, it really used that kind of organizational part of my brain, which is something I'm very, very, very good at, but don't super, super love. I wasn't getting to do as much storytelling or creative work or stuff that I get to do a lot more of now. So yeah, it's amazing how we can fall into these ruts of doing work that we are good at, but that doesn't actually make us super happy. And it happens all the time.
Yeah, totally. Okay. So speaking of creative work, of the things that you've created this year, what do you feel the most excited about?
You know, despite the fact that it was very demanding and tiring at times, I am very proud that my partner and I created a beautiful brunch restaurant. I mean, literally out of nothing. Like it happened and now it exists, and it's been, you know, it has a fan following now, and it's full almost every weekend, and we've gotten amazing reviews and responses. You know, we had a 103-year-old woman eat brunch there, and we've had bachelorette parties. And I mean, it's just like to see that all come together this year the way it did was a huge creative victory for both of us. So that's one. And then more personally, this year I finished and self-published two books. One is nonfiction. It's called You're Going to Survive. And it's a collection of stories about rejection, criticism, humiliation, like kind of like the worst moments of different people's lives and how they survived, how they got through it. And so I interviewed, you know, everything from a DJ who became sort of the butt of an internet meme and had his photo passed around, you know, hundreds of thousands of times with everyone mocking him, everything to that, to, you know, someone not getting the job that they wanted, someone not getting on the team that they wanted, someone auditioning to go on a world tour and then their best friend gets the job instead, like everything you can imagine and how they got through those moments. And then I share a lot of personal stories as well, some of which were inspired by the restaurant, actually. So that project I'm really proud of. And it's out, it's available. The response has been lovely. And then I wrote a novel as well, which I just released a few days ago.
And it's so good.
And that's really exciting too. And, you know, even though both of those were relatively small projects, you know, both of them are around 100 pages. They're not huge books. I self-published them digitally. Like, you know, it was a very just kind of, I just wanted to get them out there without a lot of fanfare. But the fact that I completed them and just got them out feels very important, especially given how busy this year was.
So will you just give a quick overview of the novel for people?
Oh yeah. So the novel is called You're Going to Survive. No, that's the other book. Brain, get in the right track. The novel is called So This Is the End. And it's a love story. It's very sexy, or it has some sexy parts, I should say. And it actually came to me in a dream, the whole premise for the book, like literally in a dream at night. But it's basically kind of centers around the question, if you knew that you only had 24 hours to live and that's it, what would you do with that time? And then also, what if you just happened to meet the love of your life on the last day of your life? Then what?
Oh my God, goosebumps.
Yeah. So, and I literally had a dream about a year ago where in my dream, the dream that I had is not the exact plot of the book, but it was kind of the premise. So in this dream, I had died, but I had been sort of resuscitated somehow, you know, through an electric shock or, you know, whatever. But I knew that this sort of resuscitation effect that had brought me back to life was temporary. It was kind of like a bonus round. It was like, we brought you back, but you've got, you know, a day, and then that's really it. Like, then you're going to die again, and that's final. And the whole dream, I remember feeling this sense of incredible pressure, like, oh my God, I have 24 hours. Like, I need to make the most of this time. What should I do? What should I do? Oh my God, what should I do? Combined with moments of just unbelievable, like, sweetness and tenderness, like being with my boyfriend, combined with just this unbelievable sadness, knowing that this is it. Like, this is really the end. And I woke up from that dream and I was like almost crying. Like, it was so gnarly. And I thought, dude, like, that's a really good book that I should write.
It is, in fact, a really good book.
So yeah, that's how that happened.
So, oh my God, there's so, my brain just like skidded to a halt for a second. So did that dream, I mean, obviously it, you know, became the premise of a book, but putting the book aside, for you personally, did that change anything for you? Like, is there anything that you are doing differently on the heels of that dream?
You know, I think that the past several years, for whatever reason, I'm, you know, I just turned 32 years old. I'm not a particularly old person, but I'm not a particularly young person. The past couple years, I have just felt this increasing sense of time accelerating, an increasing sense of like, you know, here we are, it's almost Christmas. And then 2 seconds later, it's like, and it's almost Christmas again. Like, it just, what? Like, what is happening? And I've been feeling an urge to be even more attentive and mindful with where my time is going. There were a couple of kind of like pivotal things. One was the day that I sat down and I tabulated how much time I was spending on Twitter every day and multiplied that by the next 40 years of my life and realized that if I continued at that pace, I would spend something like 3.5 years of my life on Twitter.
That's insane.
That was a pivotal moment where I was like, oh shit, like that's not the thing that I want to do. Like, no matter how amazing Twitter is or any social media, like that's not how I want to spend my life minutes. So that was a huge wake up moment. That was one. Breaking my leg last year after a climbing accident was another, where, you know, I was so lucky that I just broke my fibula and didn't break my neck, you know, and get paralyzed. And that was a moment where I realized, like, accidents happen, like things happen, people die, people get paralyzed, like, and it's not even if you're not doing something like climbing, like you can slip on your stairs outside. And then that was another moment where, partly because I was like super high on pain medication for like 3 weeks, but and I was having a lot of like deep rambling thoughts,
drug-induced life epiphanies.
But seriously, like after that, I was like, holy shit, like what do I really want to be doing with my life? Because it can be over at any moment. And these are all just like such cliche revelations.
But I mean, cliches are cliches for a reason, right?
Exactly. Yeah. But so there have been for sure a couple of like kind of milestone pivotal moments over the past couple years where I have really had to confront where my time is going and if I'm okay with that. And if there's anything that I've been putting off that I don't want to put off anymore. So yeah, the book was kind of as my way of sharing these questions that I've been having with readers, but in the context of like a fictionalized story that's hopefully really entertaining. Mm-hmm. That's my goal.
So on a smaller scale, have there been any like daily routines, habits that you have either let go of or brought into your life? Like just on like a day-to-day basis, is there anything that's been new for you this year?
Yeah, there have been some new things. I have been getting more back after taking a little break. I've gotten kind of more back into fitness. And as you know, yes, I decided this year to get ready for my first 10K race, which I did with your help, Nicole, which was so amazing.
It's so exciting to be there.
Yay. And I did my first 10K race, and I did a second one, and I did a third one. And now I'm training for a half marathon. And you know, making that a priority was a big change and feels really exciting. Other types of fitness too. I've just been, you know, really in a great routine lately of prioritizing fitness, which when I do that, every other aspect of my life feels better. And Preach. So it's, yeah, for sure. I mean, really, like, I was sharing with a friend recently, like, going to the gym or running or whatever is my church. Like, that's where I clear my head. That's where I reconnect with, you know, if you want to call it God or spirit or source or whatever. Like, that's when I feel like I am my strongest self in a way, and I'm learning how to endure difficult emotions, and I'm, you know, all that stuff. So being in a consistent routine with fitness has been great. And that's something that kind of like clicked into place more the second half of this year. So that's been great. Aside from that, I've been trying to get increasingly mindful about how much time I'm spending just typing on a computer every day. As a writer, so much of my livelihood comes from client-based writing projects where someone will hire me to write, you know, website language or newsletters or emails or blog posts or podcast scripts or whatever. And I mean, just by the nature of how I make money, like, I have to just be sitting and typing for a good portion of the day. But I've been trying to just make it as tight as possible. Like, can I get this done in 5 hours and just be done? Like, I don't like to spend more than 5 or 6 hours on a computer every day. So that's something that I've just been kind of tightening up, and it's an ongoing process, but I think it's getting better.
Yeah. That's something for me I've been trying to work on, like, when I'm doing the thing, actually do the thing. Mm-hmm. And when I'm not doing the thing, don't do the thing. Meaning, like, I was catching myself spending just like so much time aimlessly on the computer, on the internet, yeah. Like, just, and you look up and like 40 minutes has gone by and like, what, right? That, like, to actually be like, to make that mental switch of, okay, you're working now, sit down, do this thing or whatever. Like, it's been, I know this is something you and I have talked about offline in the past, or maybe even on the first episode of the podcast. The nice thing about, for me, like, going back to school, or like maybe for you even with the restaurant, like, there's a very clear, like, okay, I put on my uniform and I go to school and I do the things and then I come home and then I'm done, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I have homework, I have things, whatever, but it's such a more clearly, there's more clear boundaries, right? Than like working for yourself on the internet. Like, there's always things, and am I actually done, or am I working? That it's mm-hmm. been really refreshing. I feel like going back to school and having less time has even like worked with the podcast and stuff. It's made me tighten, like what you said, like tighten up to be like, okay, these are the, you have 2 hours to do this work. So yeah. Sit down, do the work, close the computer, be done. You
it's
know?
So good. Another thing that I started doing just recently, like this past month, is, you know, so every, this doesn't work for every type of business model, but it works well for mine because I basically bill by the hour when it comes to my client projects. So like my clients, let's say I have 4 clients and let's say they're each hiring me for 20 hours of work in a month. So that's 80 hours of work total. I will at the beginning of the month kind of make my production list, so to speak, of like, I need to write, you know, this many podcast episodes for Susan, and I need to work on this thing for Melissa, and I need to, you know, I just make my list of what I'm doing. I total up the hours, 80, 100, whatever it is. And then I look at my calendar and I mark out, you know, these are the days that I want to be working. I'm using air quotes, even though there's no reason for that. I am working. It's not sarcastic. Mm-hmm. And then I basically just divide the big number by those number of days. And then I'm like, oh, okay. So I need to basically work for 4.75 hours a day, or 5 or 5.5 or whatever it is, in order to hit that goal. And that's like the most duh thing to do. But for some reason, it never occurred to me to just like tally up the big number, divide it by the number of days I intend to work. And then it gives me a really specific target. Like, as long as my butt is in the chair for 5 hours, for the next whatever many days, like, I will finish all my work. I will be able to send out my invoices. I will be done. And having that, like, the sort of the daily number that's really specific has been really helpful. And it also makes it feel less overwhelming. Like, it's 5 hours. I can do that. And I can do it again tomorrow or whatever, instead of feeling like, I have this massive list of things to do and I can't. Ah.
Yeah.
So that's been a really, like, small thing that has somehow made a big difference for my brain.
It's funny. That's one of the ways, I mean, we could have a 10-hour conversation of all the life lessons that I've learned from running, but like, that's one of the things that's been really helpful for me is like, when you think about running, right? Like, obviously now you're training for half marathon, like, you can't procrastinate all your miles for the week and like run them all on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't do it. You're going to get hurt, right? Like, you can't do that. So it's like, and that's just one example, obviously, but it's this idea that I remember when I was training for my first half marathon, I mean, obviously I was more of a beginner than you are, but it was so overwhelming. Like, the thought of that many miles was just like this crazy, incomprehensible, like, never going to happen. But you have to break it down. Like, you're not going to run the half marathon tomorrow. You're going to run 3 miles tomorrow. You're going to do that, you know, and like this idea that each individual thing doesn't seem like a huge deal, but like the sum of all of those things really, I mean, this is, again, sounds like such a simple thing, but that has been really helpful to apply to other things too, that like, I tend to get stuck in this mindset of like, I have to do so much, or if I'm going to, I have to sit down and do 10 hours of work. Mm-hmm. No, just sit here for an hour, do an hour's worth of, like this idea of just kind of like chipping away at things slowly. And that like everything you do, I think about this with running too, this idea of having like a bank account, right? That it's like, okay, well, I just went and I ran 4 miles this morning. Okay, that's in the bank. No one can take those miles away from me. And like those miles, once they're stacked on top of each other over and over and over again, all of a sudden, 3 or 4 months from now, you turn around and you're like, holy shit, I'm in great shape. You know what I mean?
It's really true. I mean, and this is like, so much of the best advice is also the simplest advice. Like when it's the first of the month and I'm looking at this massive list of writing projects that I need to complete so that I can get paid and whatever, it can feel daunting even for a professional writer. But when I break it down and I'm like, oh, I have to write for 4.5 hours today or 5.5 or 6 or whatever, it's like, I can do that. Like there's something about just, this is what I'm doing today that makes it so much more manageable and makes me so much more efficient as well. Because I feel like when you're overwhelmed, it's like this lead blanket on your brain and it makes everything slower and harder. So when you're feeling less overwhelmed, for me anyway, you know, it's just doing my work is easier.
Yeah, no, it's so funny. When I get into that place of overwhelm and anxiety, basically all the things that I know to be true, like go out the window, right? Like even just in terms of having finals, you know, the last couple of weeks and being really busy, things like email have been deprioritized, which is fine, right? Sometimes you have things that have to come before other things. And I just had all these emails in my inbox that were just every day like weighing on me. Yeah. And then you start to build it up into, oh my God, I need to have 2.5 free hours to sit down and respond to email. And then you keep putting off. This morning, I literally set a timer for 15 minutes. I was like, okay, you like stand here at your little standing desk and just respond to emails for 15 minutes. And all but I think 2 of them were done.
Amazing.
And it's like, but it's so funny, like how we blow out of proportion, how long something's good. I do that with runs, not as much, but with all the ancillary stuff, like the little strength work or the thing takes 15 minutes to do my core routine. Mm-hmm. And yet I will dread it as if it's like that just do it. Just take 15 minutes. Just do the things. Like, I mean, I took a year and a half off from running, right? So like coming back to it, it's funny to kind of relearn these things and like watch myself have resistance to the things that I know will make me a better runner. And like, I'm just now, I feel like starting to get to the point where I'm like doing the work without fighting myself about doing the work. I don't know what your kind of evolution has been like with running, but that's
So many things. Like a couple years ago when I first got into weightlifting and, you know, kind of not CrossFit exactly, but like high intensity interval training, weightlifting, stuff I'd never really done before. There was a couple of trainers at the gym that I was going to at the time. And every one of them had like some little catchphrase that like really stuck in my brain. There was one trainer who would literally just like describe the workout of the day and then just be like, just get through it. Like she would just say it very simply, like, just get through it. Because she knew it sucked, like it was super hard and horrible, but just that very kind of like neutral, emotionless tone that she would use was somehow really helpful because it allowed just like turn off my brain, like no, don't think about it, don't stress about it, don't tell yourself how hard it is, like just do the 100 burpees or whatever it is and, you know, take breaks if you need to, but just get through it. And that was really valuable. Another was a trainer who, especially when we were doing something that was particularly challenging, would just say, it's a privilege to be here. And that like would make me cry sometimes. And because it's so easy to get so into your head about how hard it is to do, you know, emails or whatever. And like, it's a privilege to be here. It's a privilege to work out in a beautiful gym without, you know, bombs exploding over your head or, you know, without the threat of your life or anything. It's all of this is such a privilege. And it's just that phrase, like it's a privilege to be here. I will say to myself sometimes when I'm having a kind of a whiny or overwhelmed moment, and it always like snaps me back into the right place.
No, I love that. I was thinking, because you know this, in this kind of coming back to running, I had like a leg injury, not anything huge, luckily, but and I, you know, had to take some time off from running and was really scared about what it was going to be. And then like last week, now that I'm back to running and my leg feels good, which, yay, can be very thankful. But I was on the treadmill and I was doing this really hard workout, and I hate running on the treadmill, but it was too snowy outside. And it was just, and I just like was in this not good mental place. And I was like, you know what, Nicole, think back to a couple weeks ago when you weren't able to run, like how, well, I would have paid thousands of dollars to be able to be like, have this go away and do like how much you want to be able to do the thing when you can't do the thing. So like, yeah, be grateful that even though in this moment, like it's a hard thing, like this is what you want to be doing. Like this is the type of suffering that you're choosing. And like, to your point, that that's a privilege.
It's a privilege. Absolutely. And I mean, I've had so many just like kind of cliche, but amazing moments with running, particularly like where I'll be running and I'll feel like, oh, it's so hard, it's so cold, whatever. And then like, I'll literally see someone in a wheelchair, like at that exact moment or something like that, where I'm just like, shut up. Like, this is so amazing that I have legs that work and that I can do this. I can choose to do this. You know, sometimes I think you have to kind of smack yourself upside the head a little bit and remember just how amazing it is. And that, of course, applies not just to fitness, but to so many things in life.
Yeah. Something else in terms of like mantras or whatever that's really been on my mind lately. My friend Sarah, who was a guest on the podcast, and she's going to be doing a bonus episode too, so I'm sure this will come up with her. But she was talking about, she posted something on Instagram a couple weeks ago. She ran like a real breakthrough marathon last year that qualified her to run in the Olympic trials marathon. And so the finish line photo from that is like basically my, like I can't look at it and not cry. It's the best photo ever. But the photo she posted was like this extreme pain face, like from during the race, right? And she's like, the commentary was kind of like, it's so easy to just like look at people's like finish stuff. But she was like, it's these when you're like grinding it out and everything feels terrible. And you're like, I cannot run this pace, but I can run it to the next street corner. And then I can run it. And like, she said this thing about like, that you have to change your own life, that no one's going to run your hard miles. No one's going to do the hard things for you. And this idea of like, yeah, change your own life is like resonated with me so much and like speaks to so many things that obviously I believe in, but I think I needed that reminder. And I've thought about that on a lot of runs since, that like, it's up to you. Like, are you have to change your life? Like, you have to be the one that takes yourself from like who you used to be to who you want to be. And like, that is not a comfortable process.
Yeah. Can I talk about some people that I'm obsessed with related to this topic?
Always.
I think you know who I'm going to talk about.
Of course.
So this year I have discovered I say discovered like I'm Christopher Columbus or something. I have found on the internet some people that I've become just so obsessed with and that I find so inspiring. And usually the people who inspire me most are not writers, are not authors. Not that those people aren't inspiring, but like I always find myself looking outside of my industry for inspiration. So a couple people that I've become obsessed with, one is the bodybuilder named Kai Greene.
Okay.
He is, I mean, you can Google him. It's Kai. We'll put a link in the show notes or something. He is a bodybuilder. I know that's not everyone's sport of choice. I find it slightly bizarre to look at myself. However, the amount of discipline and just like the kind of obsessive discipline that you need to excel in that sport is amazing. And this one particular guy, Kai, he did this kind of like behind the scenes documentary type thing about his life. And he said kind of a variation of what you just said. He said, you know, when people see me on stage getting the trophy or getting the medal at the bodybuilding competition, and they look at my body and my abs and everything, and they go, I want that. But what they don't see is everything that it takes to create that. And then he did this little video series of like him in his apartment at 4 a.m., you know, cooking 8 pounds of chicken and sweet potatoes and whatever, and dividing up his meals into his Tupperware containers and putting his Tupperware into a garbage bag so it wouldn't leak, and putting that in his backpack and getting on the subway and going to his first workout of the day and his second, and just like the grind that's required to create this magnificent moment that everyone looks at and goes, wow, you know, how amazing to be him. And I was just so inspired by him. He's also just completely insane in like the best possible way. And like he has all these catchphrases. Like he always says, thoughts become things. So you need to, you know, you need to believe that you can create what you want to create.
I just want to comment on that really quick. One, that's amazing. But this idea of like what it really takes, the thing that like kind of flipped the switch for me is like in not like a masochistic way, but like falling in love with the grind and like the process. Like even this morning I ran 4 miles this morning outside. It was 12 degrees. Like that's cold, right?
Real cold.
I think we would both agree that that's cold.
Yes.
And like, there's just something about, I don't know, this idea that like, this is a tough condition And like, it wasn't unsafe, like it was fine. But like thinking to myself, like, it's almost more gratifying to be like, no, yeah, like I want this enough that I'm doing this hard thing, when it would have been like so much easier to stay inside and like sit by the fireplace and drink hot chocolate and like read something. Like, there's something there. Like, if you can make that switch, like people talk about motivation or all these things, like if you can make the switch to valuing like the most grind moments, I feel like that's like, it's great to have the good result at the end for sure. But like, that's what I think day by day makes you a stronger person, to be like, and now all the rest of the day, I'm like, fuck yeah, I ran in 12 degree weather today. Like, bring it, whatever. You know?
It's such a big coin in your confidence bank and in your joy bank. I thought of something that I'll come back to later. I'm going to put my finger on the table to remind me. This is my kinesthetic cue.
Okay.
So the other person that I am, or two other people I'm obsessed with, are both magicians, Chris Angel and David Blaine. I could talk about both of them like basically forever.
We talked about them all night last night.
But so Chris Angel, I got to see live this year and it was phenomenal. David Blaine, I hope to see live next year. It's basically my only life goal is to see David Blaine. I'm not even joking. But I watched an interview with Chris Angel. For those of you who don't know, Chris Angel is this incredible, you know, magician, illusionist, endurance artist dude who has shows in Vegas and he's done TV shows and all these things. And he was talking about his early career, and he talked about how there was, at one point in his early career, he got like a big break. Like, he was invited to do, you know, card tricks as kind of entertainment at some kind of big conference with like 6,000 people attending. And he was just supposed to kind of mosey around the conference floor and like do card tricks and amuse people, whatever. And he had this one card trick that he really wanted to perfect. And he, over the course of that weekend, I think he said he wound up doing this one 10-minute trick like literally 600 times.
Wow.
Over and over and over and over. And he described it as a grind. He said, I was just grinding it out. And that was just one example of basically the first 18 years of his career, where he would do, you know, morning TV talk shows, bar mitzvahs, birthdays, wedding, you know, you name it, he would do it. Any opportunity to hone his craft or practice a new trick or whatever, he would say yes. And now, you know, when he's on stage doing these like incredible illusions, you know, of course it looks so easy and it looks so whatever. But he was very frank about the fact that, like, you know, you have to be willing to do the grind. And that's the part, of course, that no one wants to do or think about. And it's not particularly glamorous or sexy. I mean, I think it's sexy, but a lot of people don't. But you know, I don't think that everyone needs to be obsessive to the level of Chris Angel, but no matter what your goal is, like, there is some element of the grind involved. And that is usually the part that people avoid or neglect or just refuse to do. And I think that's really important for us all to remember and like have a wake up call about that.
Yeah.
And kind of ask yourself, like, what's my version of the grind that I'm just not willing to do?
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons. I know there's like lots of digital platforms like with Garmin and Strava and like things where people like track and post their workouts or like runs or whatever, which is fine if that works for them. But I, the last couple of years, have been using just like basically a training log, like a notebook. First I used Lauren Fleshman's Believe Journal. And then this year they came out with like a pared down version that's just the logbook, which is amazing. And like, there's just something really gratifying about like, okay, I came in from the run and then I did my core work and I did my stability work. And then I sat down and like, I got to write a little 4 in the total mileage box. And I got to say, like, it was 12 degrees outside and I ran this run and like the last mile was like really fast. And like there's just something really nice about like manually keeping track of the things and like to be able to then like 6 weeks, 12 weeks, 6 months from now to flip back and be like, damn, like I did all this work. So I don't know. I think that's like, if for anyone who wants to kind of get into the grind more, like tracking it is really like in a very like pen to paper, like not using an app, not like there's something awesome about being able to just like with your actual hands tangibly flip through. Like, I did this, I did all of this work.
Yeah, I think something that you touched upon earlier, like you also have to really change your attitude about it and get to the point where you love the grind, you want the grind, like you almost like glamorize it in a way where it feels so satisfying and so exciting to do that tough work and to feel the pride that comes with finishing your grind of the day, whatever it may be, whether it's, you know, push-ups or running or writing or baking or, you know, whatever, practicing your magic tricks. Like, yeah, there's this element of repetition I always think about my brother, who's super inspiring to me. He's a jazz musician and a composer and a producer. And, you know, I mean, like, he has been rave reviews in the New York Times. Like, he's at the top of his game in the progressive jazz world, which is like a very niche kind of music. But, you know, I've seen my brother become the musician that he is, and I have seen him take his saxophone and go into empty parking lots underground because it was the only place that he could practice, even if it was freezing, or go into broom closets or go into bathrooms, or, I mean, just, he will practice every day, and it doesn't matter if it's the grossest, I mean, laundry rooms, you name it, like, he'll find a way to do the grind and do his practicing. And that's something that I always think about when I'm feeling kind of like whiny about anything that I need to do. Like, there's always a way to get this work done, and you just have to decide to do it. And on the other side of it, once you're finished, you feel this joy and pride that is, you know, just priceless, really. It's a different kind of joy and pride than you get from just like watching Netflix and chilling out.
Totally.
Which is delightful too, but different.
Totally. It's, you know, the other thing with this is I feel like I've said this a million times before, but unfortunately, you know, when you need something to be the easiest and most accessible, like at the beginning, right, is when it's the hardest, because you don't have those like mental pathways built. You know, you haven't developed this relationship with the grind. But it's almost like the thing that if I could go back and tell we're using running as an example, but to your point, this could be true for literally anything. Like, if I could go back and tell myself, like, when I was first started getting into running, and like when everything felt so overwhelming and hard and all I wanted to do was avoid the grind, like, this basically advice of like, just keep doing this, and then eventually you will get, how do I want to say this, you'll get past the point where it's so much mental anguish. Like, it's always going to be physically hard, but like, I would have never believed that it would have gotten to the point where like this grind, this repetitive thing, this practice can almost feel sacred, right? Yeah. But like, that begins to happen, because it's almost like, it's like the myth of motivation, right? Where people think they have to be motivated in order to do something. But like, what you need is repetitive action, which builds momentum, which makes you feel motivated, which then is just like a self-perpetuating cycle. And like, for me, I've had periods of time, you know, when being really busy, like what you were describing about essentially having two careers this year, right? That like, your workouts start to slip away, or these types of things. And, you know, I have had periods where I'm like, is it selfish for me to spend like, you know, time working out, doing this? And I mean, I'm sure the answer is yes, but it's the number one best thing that I could do for like my mental health, my everything. That like, making that a sacred, non-negotiable thing has had such huge benefits too.
Yeah, totally. There's not a poster, but like a thing painted on the wall at my gym that says, nothing feels better than a finished workout. And I think that is very true. And again, applicable to so many things in life. Like, the grind might feel uncomfortable or hard or demanding or boring or whatever, but nothing feels as good as being finished and finishing the marathon. I assume one day I will get there. Finishing the 10K, finishing the book, finishing the workout, whatever it is, like, that feeling of I did it. I mean, that's the feeling that I feel like I'm chasing more than anything else these days. It's my favorite feeling in the world.
Yeah, me too. And it doesn't even have to be, I finished this huge, amazing thing.
Small thing.
It's almost like, for me, the feeling is tied into, let me backtrack. For so long, I was a really flaky person with other people, but more than anything with myself. Like, I just had this track record of, you know, making and breaking promises to myself.
Yeah.
And after a while, that becomes who you are. And it honestly feels like shit. It's awful.
Yeah.
And so for me, these little things, it's like every day that I can look at my schedule and say, I said I was going to run 4 miles today, and then I go run 4 miles today. It's like essentially building up the new person that I want to be. That's someone who like does what she says she's going to do, basically, even if it affects literally no one. I mean, my husband doesn't, nobody cares if I ran the 4 miles this morning, right? But it's just that act of like, even if the thing itself doesn't matter, that there's a lot of benefit and strength and glory to be found in just like following through on the things that you tell yourself, right? Like, if you say you're going to blog every week, or if you say you want to write this book, or you want to do whatever, and you just keep not doing it, that weighs on you in like this very psychological way that I think can be really damaging.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you can start to become the type of person who keeps the promises that she makes to herself or he makes to himself, I mean, that, I feel like that is the true bedrock of self-confidence, and it's something that has to be earned. It's not something that you're just born with necessarily. I remember when you did your podcast about your big hike, and you talked about how a big motivation or a big reason why you wanted to do that hike was that you wanted to prove to yourself that you could finish something. And like, I almost started to cry when you said that. I was listening at home in my kitchen with Brandon, and I had this feeling of like, me too. You know, like I don't necessarily want to do a hike like you did, but I crave that feeling of finishing things, whether it's big or small, because it is so easy to flake and it's so easy to let loose ends not get tied up or whatever. And that I actually was thinking a few months ago, I think my theme for 2017 is just finish it. Like that's kind of the feeling and the energy that I want throughout the whole year with my creative work, with my writing, with my training, with my workouts, even just like with like tidying up my apartment. Like I just want to feel like it's done. Just let it be done.
Yeah, no.
Because that's such a powerful feeling.
I think that it also, building that habit of doing the things that you say you're going to do, I think, or at least for me, has also made me more honest with myself about the things that I don't want to do and then just not saying yes to them to begin with, right? Like you start to parse out the difference between the things that you really do want to do, but you hold back because of fear or resistance versus the things that you're like, I don't want to do that. So I'm not going to say yes to those kinds of opportunities anymore.
Yeah,
you know, so I love that as a theme. Okay. So let's talk about next year a little bit. Do you have any specific goals or projects, whether personal or professional, that are on your mind?
You know it. You know I do. Okay. Here are my goals. They are very brief and simple. I have decided, after taking a little bit of break from the traditional publishing world, that I want to get 2 book deals in 2017, one for a fiction project and one for a nonfiction project. And then it'll be like I'm a UFC fighter with belts in 2 divisions. I'll just dominate everything. I'm working on getting a new agent because my literary agent is taking some time off for personal reasons. So new agent, double book deal. That would be a tremendous professional victory for me to make that happen. And my motivations are, I will say, different than the first time that I pursued a book deal and got one. I think the first time I pursued a book deal and got one, I wound up getting 2 actually, both nonfiction. There, you know, I was very excited about the book projects, but to be totally honest, like I just thought it would be like sound fancy if I got a book deal, and that was very motivating to me. But this time, it's a little bit of that, you know, it's a little bit of the prestige factor, but it's also that I have 2 projects that I believe in so much, and I genuinely want them to be in bookstores, and I want them to reach as many people as humanly possible. So there's still a little bit of the chasing the prestige, which I think is just human nature, and that's what our egos want, but it feels different this time. So I'm really excited about that. Book deals, book deals, book deals. I also want to do my half marathon. I will do that in February, maybe a full marathon if my body feels good towards the end of the year. For sure going to see David Blaine when he goes on tour. Massive life goal. Would also like to see Hamilton on tour. I was blessed to see the original Hamilton cast, but I need to see it again because, like, you know, that just has to happen. And aside from that, you know, I have some pretty specific financial goals this year that I want to hit in terms of, you know, workshop ticket sales and client projects and whatnot. That doesn't really feel like a massive goal. That's more just like, you know, if I do these things, that number will get earned.
Right, like keep the trains running on the tracks.
Yeah, just keep the trains running. But the other things, the book deals, the David Blaine, and the half marathon and marathon, those are things that feel like thrilling, exciting. I mean, really, David Blaine is at the top of the list. Like, I just really want to see David Blaine. That's not really a goal. That's just me buying a ticket. But nonetheless, I'm very excited about it.
That's hilarious.
I also would like to... I would like to take some type of beautiful personal trip, whether it's to Europe or somewhere else in the world. But I really enjoy traveling by myself as well as with other people. But there's something special about traveling alone. So I'd like to make the time and choose a place and just have like a really special experience of a week or so, probably in the summertime.
Yeah, I've traveled alone, but mostly like I'm traveling alone to go to a thing, right? Mm-hmm. Or like there's someone that I know on the other side. Like I'm going to go to Spain by myself for 2 weeks or whatever. And there's something that sounds incredibly fantastic about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love traveling alone. I've been doing it my whole life. My first solo trip was when I was 19. I went to Dublin and I spent 2 weeks in Dublin and also traveling around the Irish countryside. And it was, I didn't have a cell phone. I was completely untethered. I don't even think I had a computer with me. I mean, these were like the pre-everything years, and it was such an adventure, and it was so beautiful, and I love those types of things. So I want to do at least one trip like that in this coming year.
That sounds awesome. Mm-hmm. What's one thing that you'd love to get better at in the next year? Maybe like a skill or a habit or a behavior or something small?
There are so many. One thing that I've been working on, although you probably have not been blessed to notice, is punctuality. I've been working on punctuality a lot. I've gotten to a point where I'm very, very punctual with certain things, but not with others. Like if there's a hard time, like this yoga class starts at 9 a.m. or whatever, I've actually gotten much better at arriving not just on time, but early, and enjoying kind of a peaceful moment before the thing begins. So with like, you know, client phone calls, classes, things like that, I've become very punctual. The next phase is becoming punctual with sort of like soft deadlines and sort of social commitments and friend things. And for whatever reason, I've just always struggled with that, particularly when it's, you know, not just me, but like me and other friends or me and Brandon or other people involved. Like, I would like to get to a point where I'm just like, all right, guys, like, we're getting in the car and just kind of like wrangle the cats and make things happen, because I do really like to be on time. And that's something that I have continually struggled with.
That's like that is not something I struggle with.
Yeah. So that's a kind of a very small but important personal thing that I'd like to work on. And the other thing is making dinner. I love food and I love having yummy food, but for whatever reason, me and Brandon, my partner, like, honestly, more often than not, it'll get to be like 6, 7, 8, even 9 p.m. at night. And we're like, oh yeah, we're hungry. Like, what a shock. Somehow it's like stunning every night that we're like hungry and we want food. And then we're, you know, we either kind of throw something together really haphazardly or we end up ordering takeout or whatever. And I would like, you know, at least like 4 nights out of the week to just have dinner like handled in a peaceful manner where it's like, you know, 6:30 or 7 p.m. and there's lovely things happening and it's not this like sort of like just basically whenever it's like 10 p.m. and we're like ordering Thai food, I'm just like, we are grown-ups. Like, this should not be happening like 6 nights out of the week. Like, what is wrong with us? How is this a thing? So I don't want to feel like a child anymore who like can't feed herself.
Yeah, that's hilarious. That makes me think something that I would like to get better at is, this is less tangible, but I tend to emotionally make a big deal of like all the things to do, right? Like, oh, I got to go to the grocery store again. And like the house needs to be cleaned again. And like all these like the things you just have to do because you're a human in the world, right? And like, I don't know, I just like make it such a big deal. And mm-hmm. I like, and again, like what you said about the, your whatever that trainer at the gym of like, just get through it. Like, just get up and go to the damn grocery store. Like, mm-hmm. what do you make everything? Like, I just turn everything into such a big deal in my head. And like, all I want is for like, not to have to deal with it. Mm-hmm. So I would like to get better at that.
Yeah.
Don't make such a big deal. Like, don't create fake problems for yourself.
I know.
Like,
and I also do a thing similar to that of like, I'll decide that like some little email or phone call is going to be like so hard or like, here's an example. So like we rent an apartment that came mostly furnished and we like most of the furniture in it, but there's this one red couch that we really don't like. It doesn't look good. It doesn't match anything. It's kind of old. It's just gross. And for like literally a year, Brandon was like, email the property manager, ask if they'll just remove the couch. Like, maybe they'll just take it out of here. Maybe we don't have to have it here. And like every time I thought about emailing her, and I'm like not a cowardly person, but for some reason I was just like, she's going to be so annoyed. She's going to say no. She's going to do this. Like, da, 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 da. It's not possible. They won't, blah, blah. And like the other day I just sent her an email and I was like, here's a photo of the couch. We don't like it. Can you take it away? And she was like, we'll consider it. And they're going to like get back to us. And it was like, no big deal. But for some reason, this was like the most terrifying thing for what? Like, they were going to be furious at me because I had the gall to, I don't know.
I can't tell you how much I relate to this, right? Like, so now as we like sit and look out the window and it's like super snowy, right? We have our Honda Civic, right? Like, not an amazing winter weather car. And this is our third winter here in Bend now. And every year we're like, should we get an all-wheel drive car? Like, what? Like, it's kind of reached the pinnacle of, especially now that I have school and I have to be somewhere at a certain time where I didn't have that necessarily in the past. And I don't feel safe driving, you know, some of the days there, I know it's not going to be a big deal to just like start emailing dealerships and get like, but I have this like enormous mental block about like, well, and then we have to talk to our insurance and then we have to do like, I just, yeah, same thing. That, again, yep. If I would just set the timer for 15 minutes, sit down and just
we just we do make it, we invent like hardship when there is none so often. And I do that all the time. That was one example. There have been so many. Back when Brandon and I had first started the brunch restaurant and we needed to market it and spread the word and like get, I mean, no one knew we existed. So we had to like really pound the pavement. We printed out like 1,000 gift cards for just like a free hot chocolate or like something really small to try to entice people to come into the restaurant. And I literally had to march up and down the street, hand them out, go into shops, introduce ourselves, hand whatever, whatever. And like, I invented this whole thing in my mind that this was going to be like the most off, like people were going to yell at me. People were going to slam doors in my face. People will be like, how dare you? I hate hot chocolate or like whatever. And like, I had to really talk to myself and be like, Alex, you are literally giving away cards for free hot chocolate. Like, who wouldn't want that? Like, calm down, go talk to the nice man, like hand over the card. Like, I had to like talk to myself like a child because I invented so much fear around the imagined reaction that people would give me. And, you know, it was so ridiculous, but it's so easy for your brain to just like run away wild when it comes to like very simple tasks.
It's hilarious. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I can't let you go without giving a shout out to the restaurant. So tell people the name of it, where it's located. Because by the way, for everyone who's listening, it's literally the best brunch that I've ever had in my life. It was so good. You were there with me that I almost cried. It was like, I literally almost cried and it was the best day. So tell people where they can eat this amazing thing.
It was really amazing watching Nicole, who is basically vegan, eat a non-vegan brunch and like get so happy / angry that she was like basically making strange facial expressions and outbursts every few bites.
It was
for
incredible.
All to hear. So the restaurant is called Honey Milk. It's HUNNYMILK. It's in Portland. It's on the east side. Currently it's only Saturday and Sunday, but probably that will change in the new year. It is delicious. And you should come check it out if you're ever in Portland. Also, we have a lot of fun stuff there. Like you can do tarot cards or you can do coloring sheets that I draw and lots of activities to amuse you while you're waiting for your food.
And the food's so good. The
food
oh
is dope.
Oh my God. Yeah. So go eat that food and then
eat it. It's so good. Bring your friends and get the biscuits. The biscuits are really good.
Biscuits are really good. Mm-hmm. What was the thing you were going to remember to say with your pinky on the table?
Oh, thank you for reminding me. I took my pinky off. So then I forgot. So it had to do with what we were talking about earlier regarding fitness. So another kind of shift that I had this year, which was really, really positive, is that, for example, with fitness, a lot of people, let's say they hire a personal trainer and their personal trainer will be like, you know, what's your goal? Do you want to lose 10 pounds? Do you want to lose 2 inches off your waist? Do you want to whatever, whatever? And they try to get their client to kind of choose like that type of goal, which is honestly like there's nothing wrong with that. If that's your goal, whatever, that's fine. You rock it out. However, another way to kind of look at that is, what are the habits that you want to create? And, you know, is your goal that you want to just come to the gym 2 times a week? Like maybe for you, that would be a huge achievement. And there's something in, for me, switching from, you know, kind of an external number related goal to a habit related goal and making the habit, like the habit is the goal.
Yeah.
That has been a huge life changer for me, not just with fitness, but with so many things.
100%.
Mm-hmm. So that's something I wanted to mention.
No, I couldn't agree with that more. I mean, I think especially when it comes to fitness, like fitness and weight loss are linked so much together mm-hmm. in like people's minds, in our like cultural narrative, whatever. And I mean, I don't want to enter that landmine right now, but I think there's so many benefits, like everything that we've just talked about like pushing yourself physically and to do hard things, like if you're able to do physically able to do that, that have nothing to do with like an end result, right? Like, and even if it's taking out of the weight loss, for me with running, like, yes, there are certain times that I would love to run. I would love to run, you know, a 5K PR in the spring and these types of things. Like, and that does, I think about that at like mm-hmm. the hardest points of runs and like imagine that happening. And it's like good in the moment motivation for me, mm-hmm. but like that it has to be about more than just an external, like, well, I have to run this time, otherwise it's not worth it. Or I have to lose this amount of weight or it's not worth, because
right.
that's not, it's like making it too one dimensional. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that idea of like, what are the habits that you want to build and looking at it as something that's going to continue even if you do or do not reach the goal, that the habits are going to continue.
Yeah.
I remember the last thing that I'll say, one of my favorite things, which you might enjoy, I can show to you, the website FlowTrack. It's basically the like central thing for track and field. If you want to watch track meets or like any of this kind of stuff, and they have a pro, like they have like a subscription, right? And part of the videos that they have this series, this original series they've created called Driven, where it's basically like 15 to like 20, 25 minute episodes about like certain professional runners or whatever. And they're like incredibly well done. Sounds and incredibly so good. Motivational. And like, we can watch a couple later, but, and there was one two-part series with Evan Jaeger, the steeplechaser who won, I think, silver at the Olympics last year, but like incredible athlete, right? And he was talking about something about like kind of letting go of the, I have to run this time or I have to do this thing, and like focusing instead on like, I'm going to get as strong as I possibly can and then figure out what to do with that strength. Like once I get there, like to the start line or to the race season or whatever, that this idea of just focus on the habits and get as good as you can get. And then like let the results kind of come to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I think that it's super important. Just the idea that the habit, establishing the habit is the goal. Getting the work done is the goal. Getting the grind done is the goal. And then all of the other things like getting faster, getting leaner, whatever, like that's the side effect of all of this beautiful work that you're doing in pursuit of your goal.
Yeah, I love
that. I have a question.
Yes.
What are some things you're looking forward to in the very immediate future or in the next year?
Well, in the very immediate future, we're going snowshoeing this afternoon.
Snowshoeing!
So I'm very excited about playing in the snow.
Yay!
I am on winter break from school, which has been, I've been on break for what, like 6 days of my 4 weeks of break, which is funny. I was really looking forward to having break, and it has actually been very anxiety producing for me to have to go through the, well, what's the best way to spend this time? What am I supposed to be doing with this time? Mm-hmm. And like, I had a little talk with myself this morning that's like, all right, it's enough of that. Like, you don't have to like use the most productive winter break ever. Like just relax a little bit. Right. So I'm looking forward to
17 ways to hack your winter break. Number three will blow your mind.
Exactly. But I do fall into that trap a lot. Mm-hmm. Like one of my weak tendencies is to fall into exactly what you just said. Well, like who on the internet thinks that I should be using my time in the
bulletproof coffee.
Exactly.
Bathe in bulletproof coffee every day of your winter break.
So in the immediate future, I just want to enjoy the next 4 weeks. There's a couple of things that I want to work on with baking. It's like a good opportunity to bake without like the pressure of being in school. One of which being cinnamon buns. That's something I would love to get amazing at making.
Can we like make them today? Like
we could. Yeah.
Enough talk. Let's make cinnamon buns.
I want to make cinnamon buns. I want to have fun reading and just like laying on the couch by the fireplace and like reading good books and just like giving myself a break. Also, now that the podcast funding goal has been reached, which is like the most amazing, delightful, like I'm so grateful and excited. Thank you guys so much. That I know, given how busy school was, that I would like to get season 9 recorded during break before, because I go back to school January 9th. So, I will be sending out the invites. I have my kind of dream wish list of, here's people that I'd love to have on the show. So I'm going to start sending out those invites. So I'm excited to just like, I don't know, push myself to same thing. What's the worst case scenario? Someone's going to say no, or they're not going to respond. Okay. I'm going to live just as long and die just as happy if X person doesn't want to be on my podcast.
Honestly,
right?
Like most people to get invited to be on a podcast are like pretty stoked about it. Like they're probably going to be super flattered and excited. It's rare that you'll get a no.
Yeah. So, I mean, and there have been people that haven't answered or that have said no, and guess what? I'm still alive. It's fine. Right? Like if that's the worst case scenario, it's fine. So that's a very immediate future. Next year, what am I excited about? I'm feeling very excited about running and like very grateful to be back in this place. So being able to actually race again and like get fit and use that as an excuse to also like spend time with friends. Like I really love doing races with other people just for the excuse to like, let's meet here for the weekend and like do this thing and then do all these other fun things around it. Excited about that. Super excited about school. The first term was incredible, like challenging and fun and everything that I wanted it to be. So like actually really going to the next level and trying to just become like a better and better baker. Same thing. I don't really have as soon as I'm done with school, this is my like career goal or this is what I want to do with like this baking degree, but it's more just let me focus and learn as much as I can and get as good as I can get. And then kind of trust that whatever I want to do with it is going to make itself known. So those are some things that I am excited about.
Those are all so exciting. I'm also excited about snowshoeing today. I think that's going to be bomb.
I love it. The last thing that I wanted to ask you. So if you could leave our community, like the people who are listening, with either like a call to action or just like something to think about in this kind of end of year reflecty, who do you want to be next year thing, maybe a question to ask themselves or a small action to take, what would you love to spread into the world?
I will say finish something because it will feel really good and you'll have deep pride in yourself and you'll know that you are capable of finishing things, and then that will spill over into the next thing that you want to tackle. So just finish something today. Write one letter to a friend and like put a stamp on it and drop it in the mail, or like wash all your dishes or run for 5 minutes or whatever, but finish something, because that is, in my opinion, one of the most powerful feelings that you can give yourself, and it is so, so, so valuable, and so it really does create this ripple effect in your life.
Yeah, I love it. So where can people find more about what you're doing, especially if that's going to be your theme for next year, finishing stuff? I'm curious how this spills over.
You can find me on my website, which is alexandrafranzen.com. It's just my name with .com at the end. And that's all. That's the only place. I don't do social media anymore. You can email me. I will respond to you. However, it'll probably take me like a month because I'm really, really, really slow. But feel free. I like to get emails from people. My email address is on my website. Aside from that, you can see me bopping around Portland doing my thing with my blue hair. I'm easy to spot.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It was so fun.
Let's go snowshoeing.
Snowshoes!